All right, our last presentation is the effect of cultivation and timing of fertilization on large patch disease and zoysia grass. Ken Abassa, Megan Kennelly, Jack Fry, Del Bremer, Rodney St. John, Kansas State University, and Ken Abassa will be presenting.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks, y'all. Thanks all for staying by for my presentation. I won't take too much of your time. Well, I really like this title picture because it shows a disease that pretty much describes itself. That is large patch, the same one that was talked about earlier on. This disease is favored by cool weather conditions, which we typically get during the spring and fall seasons in Kansas. And right there, you have the characteristic symptoms of the disease. It may, however, or may not have the orange margin to it. We also know that this disease is can become severe under wet conditions. During summer, the tuff typically recovers from the disease with healthy regrowth, even in areas that have previous history of the disease. And the current management practice for this disease is typically application of fungicide in fall, but also in spring, as may be required. Going into the study that I'll be describing shortly, we have two main objectives. The first is to study the effect of cultivation, which included core aerification like we did, verticutting and sand top dressing on large patch. Along with that, we also wanted to know the effect of cultivation on tough microclimate. Our second main objective was to study the effect of nitrogen fertilization in spring and fall versus summer on large patch development. We all know that some superintendents like to apply nitrogen early in spring to promote early tuff green up, and sometimes in late fall to delay the onset of tuff dormancy. This study was carried out at three locations in Kansas, Manhattan, Hayesville, and Olathe. At each location, our experimental design was a split plot with four blocks and four replicate plots of each treatment. The all plot factor was cultivation versus non-cultivation. When we cultivated, we would typically sand top dress with about a quarter inch of sand. And the split plot factor was either application of a pound of nitrogen in spring and fall using straight urea, or application of 2 pounds of nitrogen during summer using polymer-coated urea. Like I said earlier, we also wanted to find out the effect of cultivation on tough microclimate, and to do that, we installed a dual probe and a thermocouple, one each in four cultivated and non-cultivated plots. The dual probe was installed at 5 inches below the touch layer, and this measures volumetric soil water content as well as soil temperature, while the thermocouple measures touch temperatures and were installed in the touch layer. The study started in 2008, but at the time only the Manhattan location had large patch disease from natural infection. But this went uniformly distributed across all of the treatment plots. So what we went ahead and did was by the fall of 2008, we did artificial inoculation at all three locations so that by the spring of 2009, we had our plots looking like you see right here, with more uniform distribution of patches across all of the treatment, all of the different treatment plots. To evaluate for the effect of the treatment on large patch, we used two methods of data collection. The first was patch size measurement, which we did by directly measuring the sizes of the patches along two fixed axes. The second method was by patch image analysis using the SigmaScan Pro 5 image analysis software. This allowed for direct quantification of the percentage of disease tuff within a fixed area across the different treatment plots, and proved particularly useful actually under two circumstances that we encountered. First, during summer, early summer especially, patch margins becomes less well-defined, making direct measurement pretty much impossible and unreliable. And in another instance that I'll describe later on, cases where patches become coalesced or, say, like an entire plot becomes covered with large patch, then image analysis becomes a preferred option. So what I'll do is I'll go ahead and present the results for each location separately, and then I'll try to summarize our important observations from all locations at the end of it all. I'll quickly go over some of my color schemes here. So the red color would always stand to represent the cultivated plots, while the blue color would always stand to represent the non-cultivated plot. The solid red line with the open red square would serve to represent the cultivated plots that received spring and fall fertilization, while the broken red line with the solid red square would always serve to represent the cultivated that received summer fertilization, and the same thing just applies to the non-cultivated plots. The arrows here, the green one would represent a point in time when we applied spring fertilization. The red one would serve to indicate when we applied summer fertilization. And then the values in parentheses would be the areas under the disease progress curve across the data point that we collected, as shown there. Like I said earlier, the Manhattan sites had large patch from natural infections, but these were not of uniform sizes. And so in presenting our data, what we did was we converted the patch size data to percentages, and we scaled those down to have a common origin of 100%. And so the subsequent increases in patch sizes were presented here as the percent increases in patch sizes shown on the y-axis, while the x-axis represents the time when we collected the data, typically at weekly intervals. The color scheme, like I said, will remain the same throughout the rest of my presentation. So spring 2009 at Manhattan, basically we didn't find any significant difference in patch sizes across the treatment plots, except for the cultivated plots that received summer fertilization starting from the 4th of June through to the 19th of June. But still in the end, we didn't find any significant difference between the treatment plots in their areas under the disease progress curve that I'll just refer to as AUDPC from now on. Beyond the 19th of June, patch sizes, direct measurement was no longer feasible, so what we did was we switched to digital image analysis. And so on the y-axis here, you have the percentage of disease turf represented there. And what we found was that by the 28th of June, again, if you look at this slide, you'll notice the last data point was on the 19th of June. And so right here is the very next day, and we didn't see any significant difference in percentage of disease turf for the different treatment plots. But about a week after that, what we noticed was that the non-cultivated plots had significantly lower percentage of disease turf compared to the cultivated plots, regardless of the timing of fertilization. Heading further into summer, by the 3rd of July, most of the differences were no longer significant, except for the one with the non-cultivated plots that received summer fertilization versus the cultivated plot that received spring and fall fertilization. By the spring of 2010, the scenario on the field had changed. So again, this was what our plots looked like during the spring of 2009. By the spring of 2010, the patches had enlarged. They had coalesced. In some instances, the entire plots were covered by large patch. So we basically, at this point in time, just switched to digital image analysis. And so for the spring of 2010 at Manhattan, except for 2 points, we didn't see any significant difference among the different treatment plots for the respective percentages of disease turf. And by the fall of 2010, we, however, started to notice a trend in which the plots that received spring and fall fertilization had significantly lower percentages of disease turf compared to the plots that received summer fertilization, regardless of their cultivation status. Again, by the spring of the current year, we observed the same trend. So if you look at this non-cultivated plot that received spring and fall versus its counterpart that received summer, it was significantly lower. And the same thing applies to the cultivated plot that received spring and fall versus its counterpart that received summer fertilization. Again, looking at the effect of cultivation on top microclimate from our Manhattan location, we didn't see any significant difference in soil and touch temperatures. Soil volumetric water content was lower but not significantly different from those in the non-cultivated plots. I'll switch to the second location, Aysville. Here, we started off with patches that we introduced from our inoculation. So all of them originally were about the same sizes. So what we're presenting here is the sizes of the patches. We have not scaled anything here. And in all, we didn't see any significant difference from the different treatments on patch sizes, except for the one date. And again, there was no significant difference in their AUDPC overall at the end of the spring season of 2009 at Aysville. Summer recovery, contrary to what we observed at the Manhattan location, we didn't see any significant difference in TOF recovery, as estimated by the percentage of disease TOF among the different treatment plots here in Aysville. However, by the spring of 2010, we began seeing a similar trend like we saw in Manhattan during the fall of 2010, where the plots that received spring and fall fertilization had significantly lower percentages of disease TOF compared with those that received summer fertilization, regardless of their cultivation status. This we noticed on the 22nd of June, and we still saw it on the 7th of June, although most of the differences were no longer significant here. We could still see that the non-cultivated plots that received spring and fall fertilization was significantly lower in percentage of disease TOF compared to the cultivated plots that received summer fertilization. Again, by the spring of the current year in Aysville, we still saw a similar trend. So if you look at the cultivated plots that received spring and fall, the percentage of disease TOF was significantly lower than that of the non-cultivated plot that received summer fertilization. For the sake of time, what I'm just going to do is summarize what we observed from the Olator, which is the third location. And during the spring of 2009, the AUDP's value, unlike what we noticed from our Manhattan location, was significantly lower for the non-cultivated plots that received spring and fall fertilization. There was no difference from the Manhattan location for their AUDPC, although the cultivated plots that received summer fertilization starting from the 4th of June began showing significantly lower percentage of patch size increases. This is the direct opposite of what we saw at Manhattan. By the spring of 2010, consistent with what we saw at Manhattan during the summer of 2009, TOF recovery was significantly faster in the non-cultivated plots compared to the cultivated plots. And by the spring of the current year at the third location, among the non-cultivated plots was where we noticed some significant difference, and this was mostly with the summer the non-cultivated plots that received summer fertilization, which had significantly lower AUDP's values percentage of disease TOF compared with those that received spring and fall fertilization. And so in summary, we didn't see any significant difference in patch sizes for the Manhattan and Aysville location. We looked at the AUDPC values as well. There was no significant differences in among the different treatment plots. However, at Olator, like I just said, the spring and fall fertilized and non-cultivated plots had significantly lower AUDPC values. And then again, the non-cultivated plots heading into summer usually would recover faster than the cultivated plots. And from what we observed from two of our locations, Manhattan and Aysville, we saw a trend where plots that received spring and fall fertilization consistently had lower percentages of disease TOF compared with those that received summer fertilization. This we observed at Manhattan and Aysville in spring of 2010, at Manhattan in the fall of 2010, and at Manhattan and Aysville again during the spring of the current year. With that, I would like to acknowledge the funding agencies, United States Golf Association and the Kansas Top Grass Foundation for my work. And with that, I'll take any question you may have. Thank you. The question is, how did we do our field inoculation? So what we typically did was we would grow out the Rhizoctonia AG2-2 LP isolate on plate, and then we would then take that and use it to infest steam-sterilized oat canals, and we would let that culture stay for about a week, 2 weeks, and once we noticed that it's fully colonized, we would then take that out to the field. And we would typically then place the infested oat canals in the layer. We'll create a layer between the thatch layer and the soil and put it right there and then cover it back, provide adequate irrigation for about a week after that to help infection gets started, and usually just takes off after that. Summer fertilization, we would do that typically during mid to late June was when we would typically go in and fertilize. And on some of my slides, the exact date were highlighted with the down arrow colored red.
So that was one application?
One application, 2 pounds in summer. And then for the spring and fall, that was my split plot treatment. So for the other one, it would be 1 pound in spring and 1 pound in fall. Yeah.
Was the disease still active at the time of cultivation, and do you think that could potentially affect your results as far as potentially spreading the disease in the plot?
Okay. So there was a study recently looking at that specifically, and we chose to cultivate during summer because the risk of spreading disease was least during that time. It's about the time when the disease begins to fade away, becomes less active, and you have less probability of like starting a new infection if you did cultivation during summer than if you did, say, during spring or fall when the disease is active.
If anyone still has any questions for any of the remaining speakers, we can go through the list. If anyone has any further questions for David Schell, if David's here, yes, he's right there. Ben Pease, fungicide requirements and water use of 5 fairway turf types. Leslie Beck. Yes, ma'am. Any further questions for Leslie Beck, the effect of fungicide timing on spring dead spot control in Bermuda grass? Any further questions for Joseph Roberts, watering and fungicides and impacts on dollar spot control? Any further questions for Norma Floor, evaluation of zoysiograss cultivar relative susceptibility to Rhizoctonia solani? Does anybody have any further questions? Because I'd rather not read this. Any other questions for Charles Schmid, nitrogen fertilization programming effects on anthracnose disease of annual bluegrass budding green turf? And I'll just assume everyone asked their questions for the last speaker. All right.